Hi, my name is Coco Mellers, and I'm the author of Blue Sisters.
In her new novel, Blue Sisters, author Coco Mellers shares the story of three estranged sisters who come together 1 year after the death of a fourth sister. Avery, Bonnie, Nikki, and Lucky Blue couldn't be more different, but the story of grief and the complexities of family are universal, and Mellers taps into her own history to explore the addictions of each Blue sister. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Coco Mellers. Could you give our listeners a description of the novel? Who are the Blue Sisters?
Yes, well, Blue Sisters is the story of three quite exceptional but exceptionally different sisters. The eldest is a lawyer, Avery, who's living in London. The next is Bonnie, who was a professional boxer, but is now living in LA when the novel opens, working as a bouncer. And the youngest is Lucky, who's a model living in Paris. And they also had a fourth sister, Nikki, who has sadly died 1 year before the novel opens of an overdose. And the story is really about their journey in the subsequent year of returning to each other, of returning to their childhood home in New York and refinding their sort of love of their sisterhood, their family, and of life itself.
So earlier this year, you gave an interview with Alice Kemp Habib with The Guardian, and you said, this is a quote, "Certain themes really choose writers. Addiction is a theme I never really chose to write about, but I cannot escape it." Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much of fiction writing, I think, is driven by the unconscious. And, you know, after I've written a novel, I can see themes very clearly have revealed themselves. But when I set out to write the book, I never think, oh, I'm going to tackle addiction in this book. I'm just driven by character always. I'm like, I want to write about these specific people in this specific moment. But I have always been very open about the fact that I am sober, and I've been sober for over 8 years now. And I come from a family of people, many of whom have grappled with addiction and many of whom are also now sober. So it's something that it's a huge part of my life. And it's a topic that I've thought about and live with, you know, every day. And so it definitely has seeped into my writing. And in a way, I sort of feel like it's something that I'm uniquely capable to write about because I've lived it from the inside, and also because I love people who are addicts and I've been one myself. So I want to write about it with compassion and openness and a lack of judgment, but also sort of with the realism of how damaging and how destructive the disease of addiction can be.
Avery, Bonnie, and Lucky are similar, yet very distant as separate characters. Did anyone speak to you? I mean, was one easier to write than the others?
They all really like capture different parts of myself and people that I love. I found Avery, the eldest, I really loved the narrative that ended up revealing itself around her choice to become a mother. I kind of had in my mind an idea of how I wanted her story to progress. And I know a character is alive and real on the page when they make decisions or come to conclusions that are really counter to what I would want or what even I want for the story because it's more convenient. So she sort of pushed back against me many turns where I was like, it would be great if right now she did this. And actually, as I got to know her character better, she often acted in a way that was totally counter to that. And I really identified with her perfectionism, the pressure she puts on herself, her desire to be a caretaker to those around her, which ultimately ends up being a sort of corrosive thing in her life because she stops taking care of herself. And I think I've heard from lots of elder siblings that they really see themselves in that character. So she's definitely one that I'm the youngest in my own family. I thought I would have the least in common with her, but she really captured my heart by writing about her.
I was looking at the different covers of your books on your website, and they feature painted portraits. Is this the same artist for all of your books?
No. The artist that I love to work with the most is Jill Buttons, who she painted the covers for Cleopatra and Frankenstein and also for the UK version of Blue Sisters. And then for the US version, most of my covers have a singular woman on the cover, which I love because it's very arresting and there's that kind of direct gaze, which I think Hope's really Like, I hope it really grabs a reader when they're in the bookstore. And there's an emotionality to like a single woman where you're really portraying one emotion. But for the US, I wanted the sense of kind of like polyphonicness, you know, the multiplicity of the storylines, that this book really doesn't belong to any single sister. It's the story of all of them, including Nikki, who's no longer alive, but as such, her absence is such a presence in the book. And also her memory, you know, the memory of her, I think, is very alive in the novel. So I loved the idea of having four sisters, this kind of, I don't know what the word is when it's a triptych is for three paintings. I don't know what the word is for four paintings. Quartet is the music, but I loved the idea of that. And paintings are so wonderful on covers because they're not prescriptive. You know, they're it's not like a photograph. You're not telling the reader exactly how a character looks. There's still so much room for imagination, but they definitely seem to capture these paintings, the essence and the feeling of how I thought the sisters are.
Well, and I kept looking back at the cover, trying to make sure, okay, do I know which sister is which? And I'm still not sure I have it right in my head.
I honestly think whatever you think, I'm not prescriptive about it at all. Like, I have my own idea, but I think once you've written a book, it belongs to the reader. So whoever you think they are is the right answer for you.
So the chapters oscillate between the perspectives of Avery, Bonnie, and Lucky. And are the points of view of each sister, is this third person limited?
Yes.
Okay, so how did you decide to write from this point of view?
That's such a great question. I'm obsessed with point of view and I love being asked about it. And people often don't because it's kind of a nitty-gritty craft question. But it's like the number one thing you have to think about whenever you start writing is what point of view you're going to be in. First person is most natural for a lot of people because we in our own lives write in first person. When you write an email, usually you're in first. It'd be a little alarming, I think, if I started writing about myself in third person to everyone, like Coco will be attending. Then second person is the most unusual point of view. So you did this, you did that. You know, there's like Bright Lights, Big City, the novel does that really effectively, but there aren't a ton of novels in second. And then in third person, you have two choices. You have omniscient third and then limited close third. And omniscient third is very traditional. A lot of the sort of big old school novels we think about, Crime and Punishment, you know, War and Peace, you know, they're all omniscient third, where you have that kind of godlike perspective. And you can do a lot in omniscient, but it's not as suited, I think, to modern day writing where we're much more emotional. And since the advent of psychology, since Freud, we want to go closer to the mind. So limited third for me is like is the 20th century model of writing a novel. And one of the reasons I love it is that you can still have authorial distance. You can still write in the voice of an author. You can use all the metaphors or the figurative language you want. But because you're close to the character, you can also really reveal what's happening inside of them. And then when you do this shifting close third, which I like to do, where you move between perspectives, you have this wonderful experience of the reader always knowing a lot more than the character on the page. So when we're in Bonnie's perspective, she might think one thing about Avery, like, oh God, she's being so shut down in that moment. And we know that Avery is harboring this secret and is trying to protect it. And so I think it's a very, it's fun for me. I'm so comfortable in close third. It feels like shifting into gear. I think it's a really nice experience for a reader too. And in my new novel, I'm writing in first person and I am like, oh, like it's so uncomfortable for me. I don't like it. But that's why I know I have to do it because I'm always trying to write the book that's as far out of my comfort zone as I can go.
So one of the sisters, Bonnie, is a boxer, and she finds a sense of release through the sport. In your acknowledgments, you thank your boxing trainers. Do you have experience as a boxer, or was it just for this novel?
It was sort of a combination, like as with fiction, again, like the pleasure is like I write what I want. So I like writing, I like boxing, you know, it's a sport. So I wanted to write about it. I don't want to write about a sport that I'm not personally interested in. So I love boxing and I loved watching it. And then I really wanted to write a character who has a very almost monastic physical life, who has to devote herself so completely to a sport, and there is no sport that asks as much, I think, of the participants as boxing. It's completely unique in that other sports, violence is incidental. You know, in football or rugby, or soccer, you tackle someone, you might get hurt, but the goal, hopefully, is not to hurt the other person. Boxing, the goal is violence. It's war. It's kind of, it's sort of mythological to me. It's so intense. And yet it's also such a cerebral sport. It's chess on the body, and we talk about boxing IQ. There's such a level of intelligence in boxers in terms of how they can read an opponent and feint an opponent and trick them and download information in just one round. So I trained with this boxing coach for a year and a half in LA. I mean, I wouldn't say that I am a good boxer by any stretch, but I did get a black eye, so I felt kind of proud of that. But I asked him to train me just as he would a professional. And it was an amazing experience. I absolutely, it's for me, it's rare as an adult to be so immersed in something that I'm a beginner at again, I think many people learn new languages, or I had no experience and I was trying my hardest to learn as much as I could, as quickly as I could. I hadn't had that feeling since I was in school, it was just wonderful.
One of my favorite lines was, "Anyone who thinks boxers aren't smart are fools. Fighters understand lying better than anyone. What else is a feint? A hook off the jab? A combination switch up? Boxers are trained to telegraph one thing and do another." I just loved that description.
Oh, thank you. It's so true. I mean, and I had no idea when you're watching it, it looks so much simpler that you're like, oh, just hit him harder, or hit her harder. And then when you learn how to do it, you're like, oh my God, this is the most intricate dance between two people, as in life, trying to understand each other, trying to get each other's hidden foibles and insecurities and fears. It's very psychological. One of the things I love so much about boxing is often at the end of a fight, no matter how brutal it has been, the boxers fall onto each other in an embrace at the end, just for the absolute love of the sport and out of gratitude and respect to their opponent for sort of putting up a fight. For a sport that is so violent, there is a dignity and a humanity at its center that is, for me, it is almost religious. Like it's one of the great loves of my life is learning about boxing.
So I read that you also worked in fashion as a writer, is that right?
Yes.
So Lucky works in fashion as a model, but these areas, boxing, fashion, I wonder how much of Coco is in your characters, including Nikki.
For me, there's so much you have to make up in any fiction novel. So I'm like, and these characters are so far in a way from anyone I know or my own family. Like when I have a sister and then I have a half sister and a half brother. When I told them I was writing a book about sisters, like my sisters were like, oh great, like which one's us? And then they read the book and they were like, who are these people? So I think I'm always trying to get that balance between like going into sort of flights of fantasy and really building a world from the ground up. And then it's also just really useful to pull on the knowledge I already have. One, it limits the amount of research I have to do. And for this one, I knew for the boxing, I would have to do a lot. So for Lucky, I'd never been a model. Obviously, it's an industry that in some ways I didn't know. But I worked in fashion. I worked as a fashion copywriter. And growing up, I had a few friends who ended up modeling. And I just always thought it was an interesting career to write about because, once again, much like with the boxing, I think people make certain assumptions about people in that industry that are often not true. So someone like Lucky, who since she was 15, has been making a living off her body, has been objectified, has been lionized and villainized, for the way that she looks. Actually, like her personality, she's very like tomboyish, she's very low key, she's quite self-conscious, like she's not, I don't know, she I sort of I was I actually when I wrote her, I thought a lot about these like skateboarder boys I used to have crushes on when I was 13. Like I wanted to try to capture their energy of like so aloof and so cool and so and yet probably very sensitive beneath the surface. So that was sort of what I was channeling with Lucky. And then I also wanted to write a little bit about, I just touch on it with a couple of scenes, the kind of professionalization, if that's a word, of children. And it's modeling is an industry that women mostly go into extremely young when they're really girls, basically a child at 15, 16. And yet they are treated and worked as if they're adults, they're sexualized like adults. And I wanted to look at, what the lasting effects of that could be and look at some of the kind of grit and trauma, to be honest, that exists beneath the glamour of that industry.
A quote that stuck with me after I finished reading the novel was this: That was the thing people didn't talk about, how much of life was just filling time.
This is from Lucky's perspective. Lucky has a very nihilistic streak, you know? And when she thinks this, she's in the grips of a pretty intense addiction to drugs and alcohol. And she is completely purposeless. Like, she doesn't find meaning in her work as a model. She has lost the closest person in her life. Of all the sisters, she was probably the closest to Nikki. She is addicted to drugs and alcohol, and yet they're also not working anymore. She's been using them to numb her feelings, and her feelings are still coming to the surface. Like, this grief is too large to numb. And so that moment, I think it's like she really has this feeling of just like, what do I do with my time? You know, there is a lot of time in any day. What do I do with it if I don't have a passion or a purpose? And a big part of Lucky's journey in the novel is trying to find that and what that's going to be for her. And it's funny, like, I don't feel this way. I'm like, I mean, I guess all of life is filling time. I remember Zadie Smith saying, like, who I love and I admire so much as a writer. And someone was like, why do you write? And she was just like, what else am I going to do with all the time? Like, that's just, we have to find something. So perhaps we all are doing, I mean, that is sort of what life is just finding hopefully meaningful and joyful ways to fill our time.
There was a part in the novel that talked about guilt versus shame. Can you talk about the difference?
Yeah, I mean, and this is something that I had heard in recovery that really, really helped me, that someone else who was sober had told me, was the difference between guilt and shame is that guilt is for something you've done, and guilt can be a genuinely useful and healthy emotion. It's also, you know, your moral compass. You can use guilt to change your behavior and say, okay, I did this, I felt really guilty, I don't want to do it again. But shame is so much more insidious and deeper. And shame is for who you are. It's not this feeling of like, I did something bad or I did something harmful. It's that I am bad. I am harmful. And the more shame you feel, the harder it is to change because it's such a paralyzing, awful emotion. And I think all of us at some point in our life, I imagine, have experienced shame. I know I have. And the time for me that it was the worst was the end of my drinking. And the shame was like, I felt like I was a sponge and you could just wring me out. And that was what would come out, was this just sense of being bad. Like, I was bad. And when I got sober, part of that healing journey for me was the forgiveness of like, I am not a bad person. None of us are bad people who end up in recovery. We're sick people who have this thing that we don't want, that we didn't know we had. And as a result, you know, you behave in ways that are sometimes hurtful and harmful to others and to yourself. That perspective is what I bring to my characters. They do experience shame. And I think shame is quite important to write about because it's, I think it's the loneliest emotion on the planet. But I don't see my characters as deserving of shame ever, no matter what they do. And they do many things, these sisters, that there's infidelity, there's you know, Bonnie beats someone up, Avery cheats on her partner, Lucky does her own stuff that's pretty wild. And yet for me, like, they're absolutely deserving of compassion and love as characters. And I always write them from that place. And I think as an author, if you don't need all your readers to love your characters, but if you don't love them, then I'm not sure why you would want to write them.
So do the Blue Sisters stick with you even though the book is finished?
They do. Well, they stick with me because I mean, I'm in the process. I toured the book in the UK because it came out a bit earlier. And they're so alive to the readers. And when I hear from readers, it's, you know, I end up in conversations about the characters as if they're real people. And there's so much in this book, you know, there's so many topics that are very personal and dear to people. One, you know, sibling relationships are incredibly powerful and precious, and people love an opportunity to talk about how much they love, or maybe don't, their sister or sibling. So that's been really wonderful. And then, you know, this book tackles endometriosis, chronic pain. That's something I've heard a lot about. So I've thought about Nikki, who has endometriosis in the book, in a new light since hearing from so many readers who have endometriosis themselves. It's just, I did a lot of research into that, and it's also something that is near to my life and to many people I love. So I already felt like I sort of was very familiar, but it's really hearing so many different women's stories has kind of brought Nikki, I don't know, a new fullness for me. And same with, I've heard from many, many readers who are sober or love people who perhaps need to be sober. And it's just, I don't know, it just adds many layers to the family. Now, all those other people's stories for me have become kind of embedded in the Blue Sisters family lore.
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from this book?
Think the answer is probably in your question, which is that I hope that they take away hope. You know, that's I'm drawn to writing about heavy topics in my work always, you know, and addiction and grief and pain. But I feel like there's something in me that's very buoyant, you know, and in the people who I surround myself with. And so I always want there to be, you know, this lightness that counteracts the darkness. And so even though this novel tackles these heavy subjects, it's also about like joy and sex and fashion and like the pleasures of living. And the question of the book for me is, how do you fall back in love with life in the wake of terrible loss? Like, how do you keep living and loving that you're alive and being happy, you know, grateful for your life when the thing that you're afraid of happening has happened? And I hope that, you know, I don't think that fiction needs to provide answers. I do think it mostly provides questions, but I think this book offers just an example of how that's possible. And I hope it makes readers feel that it's possible for them too.
Well, the book is Blue Sisters, Coco Mellers. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Coco Mellers, author of the book Blue Sisters, which was published by Ballantine. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Books and Whatnot is a podcast for readers, where we talk about the titles we've read lately and those bookish little discoveries along the way.
You know what, Beth? I have just realized what my favorite new genre is. And my favorite new genre is WTF.
It is.
Listen to Books and Whatnot every month from KMUW, part of the NPR Podcast Network.